Hello again, this is RTE's weekly Your Politics podcast. I'm Áine Lawler, with me Paul Cunningham, Sandra Hurley and Micheál Lehane. The Dáil is back, the parties have been thinking in, and it's only 3 weeks to Budget Day. But we'll start with the race for the Oireachtas. And the latest, as we speak this Thursday evening, Sinn Féin promising, what is it, Paul, a game-changing announcement on Saturday.
So we know that Sinn Féin is due to announce a decision on Saturday after an Ard Cóiri meeting as to whether or not it is going to A, stand and support the independent left-leaning Catherine Connolly, or B, have its own standard bearer in the presidential race. Sinn Féin has the numbers, so it doesn't rely on the support of anyone else. Up to this point, we went through the Let's She In, Is She Out. That was substituted then by Piers Doherty. And today we get this, what would you call it? I don't know what it is. It's a hint saying that there's a game changer. To my mind, that's a suggestion that they're not going to put their own candidate in the field, that they're more likely, therefore, to back Catherine Connolly. And the game changer is that all of the parties on the left have united candidates in a presidential election. That's what I think is coming here. That would be different. That would be new. It would be historic. It would also be cheaper for Sinn Féin not to have to spend whatever $500,000 on a candidate. And if you're looking back at how Sinn Féin has been playing this one ever since we were surprised a number of months back when Mary Lou McDonald, having said, I won't be in it vis-a-vis the presidential contest, then suddenly she wasn't ruling anything in or anything out. We've been talking about Sinn Féin and what Sinn Féin might do for several months, even though Sinn Féin haven't been in the race, which isn't half bad.
I wonder how Senator Frances Black heard that news, because she's somebody who would have been, I mean, not a member, I think, of Sinn Féin, but certainly more allied with them over the years, and certainly had hoped at one stage, didn't she, to put her name in the ring, but Sinn Féin never came calling.
That's exactly it. She had said, I'm interested, and was waiting to hear from parties, and then the phone didn't ring. And after sort of hinting at it on several occasions, she concluded that it wasn't a runner, and so therefore she withdrew from the contest. And yes, I think her she would be someone more closely aligned with Sinn Féin than Catherine Connolly, but them's the...
And we're being told whoever they back speaks fluent Irish?
Yes, plenty Irish. They have plenty Irish. So that could be Pierce, or that could be Catherine Connolly. I think Catherine Connolly's been here today. She's been relaxed. And I think you could say that the people who are advocates for Catherine Connolly and Sinn Féin seem to be more relaxed in their view as well, that the announcement may go their way, as are her supporters. Okay. So Piers Doherty's kind of appearance at the ploughing was the final move in all that manoeuvre, looking presidential, being there the day of the other candidates. So it does seem to be going in a certain direction now.
And something else Mary Lou said today, Mary Lou McDonald at the ploughing, she said that what they want to do is keep Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael out of the Oireachtas. And there just seems to have been several hints that they want to focus on also on the government side of things, and they don't want the Fianna Fáil or Fine Gael candidate to win in this presidential election. I think the problem for them, though, is if they come in and back Catherine Connolly at this stage, is it very late? It looks a little limp, maybe, to join in at this point. And I know she does want their endorsement. It would be very helpful to her to have the might of Sinn Féin behind her. For Sinn Féin, it's not much of a gamble. I think it's much less of a gamble to back somebody who's already in the race than to introduce their own person or somebody else. So I think in the end, it would kind of look, she may call it a game changer, but if on Saturday they just back Catherine Connolly, is that really a little too late?
I think there will be some within, sorry to follow on from that point, Sandra, I think there will be some within Sinn Féin who would like them to stand. They do have that unique 32-county republic which they want to advance, and this is going to be the last election for possibly 4 years. So this is it, you know, before you get to locals, European, general election, and beyond that, presidential election time again.
Catherine Connolly was at her first ploughing this week, wasn't she, Micheál, and so were you.
Yes, who would have thought, you know, 6 months ago.
I hear you were a big hit.
Well, now Catherine Connolly was a bigger hit now, I think, as were the other candidates.
Nice sidestep, nice sidestep. Yeah. Won't get your way with it, though.
Catherine Connolly had an interesting line in her press conference about opening up the process around nominations, saying that it was too tight at the moment, and also emphasising repeatedly that she can meet with people who she doesn't necessarily share the same views as, and citing the time Joe Biden came here to Leinster House when she was last Ceann Comhairle, and that she can handle all that totally impartially. The other candidates, clearly Heather Humphreys was most at ease in that environment, and that's That's unsurprising, really.
Heather knows how to close a gate. Wasn't that what Fine Gael were saying?
Exactly, yeah. Jim Gavin, when asked about not closing the gate on that promo piece that he did on a farm and wearing lightly coloured trousers as well, said that these things happen. But it was a slip, but it was an error. For someone whose army colleagues talk about the greatness of his logistical ability, which is no doubt true, being able to get 27 flights out of Chad as rebels were closing in on a mission that they were closing down. Yet when it comes to this campaign so far, you'd have to say he looks less sure-footed.
I think the trousers were fawn by the time he got to the ploughing, and there may have been something in the colour contrast that tripped him up. But it certainly, it looks like three there so far then that we've been talking about in the race that we know about for Fianna Fáil, Fine Gael and Labour, Sock Dems and possibly Sinn Féin. We'll wait and see what happens on Saturday and whether they have a surprise up their sleeves. What about Aonthu's chances of getting Maria Steen through the Oireachtas route? How's that been going?
Not terribly well at all. So Pádraig gave us eight names out of, he said, 10 pledges last week. So nine apparently is Paul Gogarty, who said that if somebody got quite close to 20, he'd come on board. The other person I understand is Gillian Toole. She hasn't unveiled herself, though, but they haven't got past the 10. Independent Ireland have said that they'll back them if they get a little, Maria Steen, if she gets a little further along. But they've been fairly unimpressed with this whole process, I think, the whole way. And it does look like a stunt at this point. It just doesn't look like she has the numbers. There's been a big social media campaign trying to push independent TDs and senators to back Maria Steen. I think it was Gerard Crockwell who said he wouldn't be bullied in that way. He said that on X. But nobody else has come out and endorsed her. And the closing date is next Wednesday, so it's not looking good.
It's been the opposite. Like Tom Clonan came out and said he wouldn't do it either. And that was important because he was one of the names who was being suggested might be a bridge towards 16, which would bring in independent Ireland. So if anything, people have dug in their opposition.
And also in what we've seen here, isn't the clue in the name independence? They're independents. There seems to be a thought process that because you're independents, you should all back together and back any other independent. That's what parties do. Independents can do what they like, and certainly Independent Ireland making it pretty clear they're going to follow their own counsel.
Yeah.
Yes, definitely.
I think though, from a campaigning point of view, what has struck politicians here is that Maria Steen didn't seem to be making direct contact with loads and loads of people, and it does seem that that is the basic requirement, and that is something that Gary Sheridan has done with councillors around the country, really, really assiduous in relation to that. And it seems to be that level of work is the biggest part in determining whether or not you get a nomination.
And he's been, how are his chances coming through that route? But he's been doing better than many had expected, I think, so far, hasn't he?
Yeah, I think for that reason, and spending time with county councillors in each county, not just one phone call, but a lot of contact. And once he got the first one in Kerry, there was a setback on that afternoon then in Laois, but then Tipperary came through by the narrowest of margins. So now it is in play for him, whether that's Carlow tomorrow and Offaly on Monday. There are other places too, like Meath, potentially Wexford as well. So you feel if he does get to three going into the weekend, well, he's a good chance, a very good chance.
Makes the debates, the likelihood of the debates. Of course, Michael D. Higgins didn't turn up to the TV debate the last time. He went on 6-1 News and then the big debate happened. But I mean, it was a rake of candidates. You know, the stage was full of them. So it's going to have a very different look this time around, I think, the whole campaign because of that.
You're saying it's going to be boring.
Yeah, I was just going to say that. It does have the potential to be dull. I think people are going to play it very safe. They're aware of the pitfalls from the past, and it does look like it's going to be quite safe and quite boring. And if Gareth Sheridan does come into the race, is he going to go on the attack against other people? Probably not. I think he's trying to sell a message that he's sort of above politics and it's better to have somebody who's not a politician. He can empathise with young people. Those are basically his calling cards. Yeah. So they're not going to get down and dirty against each other.
He's the 36-year-old young man. And of course, Jim Gavin is the young man too, as he describes himself. And he's 54 and can relate to young people now.
Well, it's all relative, 54. You see.
Who's young? Who's really young there at all now?
To be fair to the candidates, I mean, it's damn hard to have a lively debate on the presidency given the constitutional position that the president has. I mean, what's the issue?
But I mean, it's all the issues until they get to Áras an Uachtaráin, and then they can't speak on any of the issues, or they're not meant to.
On the other hand, look at what President Higgins was saying this week, going quite out on a limb, wasn't he, about exclusion from the UN over Gaza being a possibility. And I think there's been pushback from...
Well, a little bit of pushback, but equally, this is probably the last time that they'll find themselves squirming in this awkward position. So the pushback was that's not the government position. Obviously, they want to work together with other countries and get a united approach on this. But equally, one government spokesperson saying Michael D. Higgins' views can be representative of many people in the country as well.
But the right would also say, well, where was he? Why wasn't he pushing back against other conflicts that we've had in the past? And why wasn't he calling for exclusion there? So we're putting him into that left-wing box, who is sort of more opposed to America. And that's why this is the way he's reacting. So there's all that going on as well.
And all of that may well turn out to be a question in the campaign, because certainly international events are having a big impact on people's thinking.
I suppose some people say that if you look at one of the key things that the new president has to do or could do would be build a bridge with the current US administration. And you wonder who's going to try to play that card when it comes to the debates.
Well, certainly it'd be hard to match the rolling out of the red carpet that we saw in Windsor Castle on Wednesday. Holly Cairns, Social Democrats leader, back from maternity leave, Sandra, but not the return she'd maybe hoped for.
Yeah, it was completely eclipsed by the story in the Irish Daily Mail that Owen Hayes had sported brown makeup, they were calling it. It was commonly referred to, I guess, as blackface. He dressed up as Barack Obama back in 2009 when he was a student at UCC. And the story was timed perfectly to come out the day of the party's pre-doll think-in, when Holly Cairns was going to come out for the first time since she'd been on maternity leave, doing interviews and meeting all the press at the think-in. So it was pretty disastrous, actually. I was there on the day. It was extremely awkward. As think-ins go, they had all the TDs essentially locked in a room away from the press, the media, when we got there. They were brought out, five of them, including Holly Cairns, for the doorstep, as we call it, completely dominated by questions about Owen Hayes. One question about the cost of living, absolutely not what the party wants to be talking about. And then the TDs were shuffled away again. So there is a lot of unhappiness in the party. There's been some talk, some members have left around the country, but the parliamentary party is all still there. I think some of them not very happy with events, how they've turned out. But others believe that the shares issue in relation to Palantir, the incorrection that he put forward around that, that that's much more serious than this, which was historical. And that was really the point that Holly Cairns kept making, that she had to give him some latitude because this happened a long time ago when he was at college.
It's a bit unfortunate, Owen Hayes, isn't it? I mean, he could have been a millionaire and here he is. And
yes, but he was in the Dáil on yesterday, which
and
I think
speaking
exactly, and some people were surprised about that. He talked about child poverty. He had a little bit of a spat back and forth with the Taoiseach Micheál Martin, and he was sitting again with the Social Democrats because he's been readmitted. So certainly they are, I think, are happy to count him amongst their numbers because they want to stay on the same level as Labour.
So you were talking about cost of living, and the Social Democrats had wanted to focus on that. It's 3 weeks to the budget, and there's remarkably little debate or rows going on. There's been, okay, cost of living and the continuation of the cost of living expenses. We've already heard from Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers their intention not to continue with the universal benefits for everybody, nor the universal energy credits. We're told there'll be targeted measures, although Dara Cailleary's been ruling out the second tier child benefit rate coming in this
rather
budget.
Mixed message. It's in, it's out, an approximation, something approaching it will be coming in.
There's been a dispute argument about the tax package. That's about 1.5 billion out of a planned increase in total spending of 9.4 billion. So how much of that 1.5 billion would go on a hospitality VAT reduction?
Between 500 and 600, according to the Taoiseach, if not the finance minister.
So that's what's been going on.
Would you trust more on the old sums?
In the political sphere. But when it comes to the sums, the Fiscal Advisory Council and lately, most lately, the Central Bank. I mean, they're being pretty stark in their warnings to the government about you're spending too much. You're not planning to get a break on spending too much. You're relying on corporation taxes, excess taxes too much.
Well,
are they listening?
Well, it's all going to change now, isn't it? It's going to be very different from here on in. That seems to be the message. A load of money will be saved by not having the once-off measures anymore. And from now on, there's going to be really strict rules, because some would say that's because of the criticism. Others would say because there isn't an election in sight. So that's probably the more guiding political reality in all of this. But I mean, even yesterday in Cabinet, Jack Chambers was warning colleagues about this year, so spending for the rest of this year, they have to keep a tight rein on it. So there definitely is an attempt by Jack Chambers and Pascal Donoghue to say things are changing, and that what you're going to have in the budget is a lot of pointers to future investments as well, that it's not all about current expenditure, and the rate of current expenditure is going to be capped or kept at a much lower level than it has been. At the same time, though, they do seem to be talking about a situation that they're saying is very different to last year for people. They're saying there was an extraordinary cost of living crisis at that point in recent years that doesn't exist now. That's not the reality for people. So whatever the politicians are saying, whatever this new determination to stick more to the rules around current expenditure growth, that isn't going to ring true for people who are in difficulty. As well as that, if you see something on hospitality, and if, as is broadly hinted now, you see a tax break of some kind for property developers, I think that's going to be a really difficult political sell for a government. At the same time, the first budget out of five in a new government cycle is probably the time to do that.
I suppose the thing to watch out for is, at the moment, we still have that prediction of growth. If the growth ever fell off, and with Donald Trump in power, he could set off an economic wave which could really hit our shores. As long as there's growth, the government will be able to trundle along. If the growth stops, then all of those warnings that have been there from the council and the central bank then suddenly take on a greater power.
But the very eminent expert from the central bank was saying on Morning Ireland this morning, you know, before maybe your corporation tax take was paying for all your health spending, now it's paying for all your health spending, all your justice spending, all your education spending. So it's not like all of the growth is grand, except this is subsidising. We've gotten used to this day to day. And at the same time, as Micheál says, while there's been this massive increase in government spending since 2020, and it's not sustainable without those excess corporation taxes, which is a bit daft by any standard. On the other hand, you look at the increase in your health insurance, in your energy bills. Every time you go to the supermarket, you're looking at the price of butter, the price of meat, the price of milk. It's all shooting up, and people genuinely are feeling that pinch. And it's starting to show up, I think, isn't it, in some of the economic sentiment figures as well.
Yeah, and I think there's a real crunch on the energy credits, which Sinn Féin brought up in the Dáil today, because as Piers Doherty pointed out, all those price increases we heard about last week, pretty much across the board, they're going to come in on the week of the budget. So you can see that the opposition are going to focus, just laser-like focus on this over the next few weeks, some form of energy credits again that people have got used to. But the warnings have been getting worse from all the people that you mentioned, because the underlying deficit is becoming larger. Actually, the problem that's been talked to, say, 2017 with the over-reliance on these windfall taxes, it's actually getting worse. The over-reliance is becoming more pronounced. So it is a bigger problem.
And all of this suggests that in the next 3 weeks, I mean, Pascal Donoghue and Jack Chambers have been talking tough, but there's an awful lot of rows that are going to have to be had between their departments and other ministers. And then they're relying on the Taoiseach and the Tánaiste, both of them under pressure with a presidential election campaign going on. You're relying on them backing whatever the finance ministers and the public spending ministers decide. So there's going to be, that's going to be an interesting watch, isn't it?
I think they'd have nothing to worry about there, would they?
They'd you don't think so?
The ministers have anything to worry about there. I suppose there is an insistence, though, isn't there, that the tax figure is 1.5 billion, that the overall rise is 9.4 billion, and there doesn't seem to be any wavering on that one. Pascal Donoghue today on the News of One repeatedly talking about trade-offs. So that's the territory they're going into now.
Yeah, but it's Simon Harris who's nailed his colours to the mast on the 9% rebate VAT rate, isn't
it? On the day that the government was formed, that was put out very clearly. This was going to happen. And Pascal Donoghue has had higher figures around that than Simon Harris. So it does look like it's a carve-out of just the food part of it. But at the same time, there isn't a lot left. And if you have the property developer tax break as well in there, what's left in the 1.5 billion?
And you've certainly got the pushback in Fianna Fáil. You've had the junior minister, Niall Collins, coming out and saying he's personally not in favour of this tax cut. He says a lot of other people in Fianna Fáil aren't in favour of it.
Do they not go to cafes like all the Fine Gael people do?
Yeah, I don't know. But it looks like what they'll do, as you say, is they'll carve out the food part. They don't want to give it to hotels. That would be unpopular. And they'll try and backload it towards the end of next year to take the sting out of it, certainly for the first year.
Yeah.
Revising downwards of the housing delivery figures, though, that's the other thing that's been coming through consistently from a number of august economic predictors, which means that the 300,000 that the government is saying they'll still plan to deliver over the lifetime of this government, if you're revising downwards your figures for this year, next year and 2027, makes the chances of reaching that 300,000.
Don't be alarmed. There is a plan on the way, a new housing plan, a revised housing plan.
I remember, just as an aside to that, it reminds me of being at a Kilkenny-Limerick hurling game years ago before Limerick got good, and Kilkenny were top of the hill at the time. And Kilkenny scored 3 goals inside the first 10 minutes. And I was sitting beside someone from Limerick, and he said it might be the best thing that could have happened to them, now they'll settle. So it's that the figures of building the house, if you're trying to get to 300,000, maybe the slow start isn't a problem. That's the feeling in government. It'll get going later on in the latter part.
Yeah, well, they do that because one was they got the new plan, and then we heard Jim McCallan chipping in relation to judicial reviews and curtailing that, even though that's supposed to be part of the planning and development bill. We were told this is going to, two of them will dovetail together, but did raise a question. What are you doing stuff now if you haven't even fully enacted the planning and development bill? So there's big questions there.
And there was a really scary report from our environment correspondent, George Lee, today. About Dublin's poop problem, and he's been down the sewers and looking at them, and basically all the sewage in Dublin, all the sewage in Dublin comes into one big central pipe, and then it goes to Ringsend to be processed, and that pipe is crumbling and falling apart, and they're doing their best to
is
keep
George
it together.
Okay?
I heard think he was, the robot went down.
Instead of
not George.
The George Lee Environment Correspondent, I heard he was called George Lee Environment Problem.
But anyway, so the Clonshock pipeline has, for a new sewage plant, that's been the planned solution forever. It's been stuck in the planning process since forever.
That goes back to when I was environment correspondent.
But here's the point.
You didn't do enough, Paul.
Here's the point.
Breaking news left, right and centre.
Ishka Éireann are saying from 2028 there won't be enough water and sewage capacity in Dublin to connect any new housing. So that's from 2028. Even if, and it's already subject to another judicial review, even if the Clonshock pipeline goes ahead, that's going to take till 2032.
But be not afraid.
What
as
happens
well
in
as
those
the
4 years?
There's also a new committee. And that new committee is going to be looking out around the country, breaking log jams and ensuring that those developments
happen. Activation unit.
Yeah.
But not headed by a SAR, yes.
Okay. One thing I want to mention before we go, and the Cian Corla, on the return of the Dáil, had something significant, didn't she, to say, Sandra, about the increasing threat to politician safety?
Yes, we've seen obviously this spiral up over the summer, particularly in relation to Simon Harris. So Verona Murphy took the opportunity to say that she wanted to have a meeting with all the party leaders, that they had to do something. There had been a task force set up previously, but it hasn't necessarily got anywhere. And I think there's agreement across, everybody agrees that something needs to be done. It's just not clear what that something is. How do you do it? The social media companies, a lot of people would point the finger at them, that they're not doing enough, that their algorithms propel a lot of stuff forward and allow a certain type of vitriol to exist online.
Except we know what happened when the last government tried to tackle the issue of hate speech, and it's even more controversial now. Around the world, obviously, after what's been happening in the United States than it was then, before the election.
Yes, they had to drop half of the plans there, and Helen McEntee became absolutely tied to them, even though I think her people would point out that it was actually Charlie Flanagan who started off the whole process the time before her. But it became a real difficulty for the government.
I've never seen a time, though, when there are so many politicians, and most actually don't talk about it. Yeah. But like, really living with, you know, serious threats. And we've all heard about the public incidents, and you can remember Anne Rabbit and, you know, various Mary Butler, people's constituency offices. I mean, it goes on. And good luck to the Cian Corla, because it's going to be a difficult issue to get control of. There seems to be something abroad these days.
Yeah, I think that's it, is that it's going to be very difficult because it's becoming pervasive. I know she's trying to push back on it, that it isn't normalised, and I think that's the right proper thing to do. But it's a mountain.
All right. Well, there we leave you with that mountain to climb. And we'll be back next Thursday. Talk to you again then. Bye.